Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Vegan Proteins Muscles by Brussels Radio. My name's Danny.
And I'm Giacomo.
And this is our 73rd episode. Everybody, thank you so much for tuning in for another episode. Happy to have you back. This has been a weird first few weeks of the new year, I think, for everybody. Thus far, 2021 has not quite been what we hoped for. Over here on the personal front, my family, my immediate family, suffered a great loss on the 2nd of the new year. My stepfather passed away very unexpectedly, so that has been a huge blow to my family, and I actually have been staying at my mother's house ever since. So I've been there for about 3 weeks, which is not how we planned to start the new year, but you know, she only lives about 15 minutes away, and I'm really grateful, I guess. I was gonna say happy, but that's not the right word. Grateful that I'm able to be there for her. I know not everybody is in a position where they could do something like that, but I am, so I'm glad that I'm able to do that because I know how hard this was for me. I cannot even imagine, nor do I want to imagine, what she must be going through having lost her husband unexpectedly. But it has definitely made things different for Giacomo and I around here.
Yeah, and I've been at home and I've been hanging out with Danny and my mother-in-law at night. I usually head there at the end of the night and we, you know, talk, play games, eat, whatever. And it definitely feels lonely here at Vegan Protein's headquarters, but I know it's the right thing to do. And with so much change on the way, we're just trying to make sure that we're here for each other. Because let's face it, last year was a hard year. And although things are changing in 2021, there's still the aftermath of it all to go through.
But in spite of that, we told everybody that we would be doing the overhaul challenge right alongside everybody, which was, you know, scheduled to start on January 4th. You can imagine on January 2nd, I could not have given two craps less about starting an overhaul challenge. That was not at the forefront of my mind at all at that point. But we had hundreds of people signed up to do this challenge. So I just sucked it up, buttercup, and I started it with everybody else right at the 4th. And honestly, it's probably, truthfully, a truer representation of what the overhaul would be like for anybody, because I'm not going to the gym now. If this hadn't happened, I would have just been taking, you know, the overhaul is home workouts, but I would have done them at the gym. But now I'm literally doing them in a basement with a very limited amount of dumbbells and bands. And that's, you know, what most people are doing. So it's actually, as we come into the end of week 3 of this overhaul challenge, you know, everybody's killing it. I'm so excited. People are learning so much about themselves and good habits and making progress. But I've also found myself personally grateful for doing it as well, because it's given me some things to focus on and help, like, keep me grounded, even though, you know, if I'm being 100% honest, I was not the most motivated to do this. My motivation balloon deflated real fast, but you know, you do what you do, and that's what we've been doing.
You do what you do. That's right. It's sometimes it feels like a distraction, and sometimes it feels like I'm doing the wrong thing when I'm experiencing grief with others and myself personally. But like Danny said, you do what you do, or the show must go on. It doesn't necessarily feel right to take care of yourself in these kinds of scenarios, but I still think it's really important to not forget to take care of yourself.
Yeah, it's been helpful. So I'm thrilled with the feedback and the progress and the enthusiasm of everybody. And I'm also grateful for the opportunity to kind of go through it while I'm, you know, knocked down a few pegs. I mean, it's a learning experience, and I'm enjoying it, and I'm still finding it doable. And yeah, I'm really excited. I know it ends for everybody next week, but there's lots of other programs and paths, if people do want to continue, that we have available. So, you know, reach out to us. We're always here, as you well know, if you're in the Facebook group at this point. Some people are like, oh my God, I can't believe you responded. I'm like, what else would I do? Of course we're going to respond. It's our group. So yeah, we're just grateful for everybody. And you know, hopefully 2020 starts to look up. It seems to have started to look up this past week, and we're really excited for what's ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been looking into the city's directives as far as what they're going to do about vaccinating over here. And while I'll believe it when I see it, it seems like everybody will have the opportunity to be vaccinated in April in our city of 80,000. I mean, we'll see what happens. It's too soon to say, but I'm hopeful. Well, I had the idea to talk about food tracking versus intuitive eating. And I don't mean versus. I mean when to do one versus when to do the other. I think that lately, and mainly because of where we are at with our experience in this field and what we've been learning and applying with others and ourselves, that we've been just talking a lot about intuitive eating because it's an important skill to develop. And I feel like it's the evolution of what to do when you've been food tracking for a while. But that being said, I feel like it's sort of become the narrative where everyone thinks, well, hey, I should just get to eating intuitively as fast as possible, and it doesn't matter where I'm at. This is the goal, and it's just going to get me to my goals. And honestly, that's just not true. I mean, I've been tracking since, oh, I don't know, when Danny got me into tracking, and I fought her on a tooth and nail. I think it was like around 2014.
Yep.
Yep. And then finally, I was like, this is amazing. And then she's like, now stop. But anyways.
When did I say now stop? I never said that.
No. I'm busting chops. I like to do that. Don't take me literally, please. The truth is that at some point, both of us started to basically challenge one another to take off the training wheels and see if we could maintain a certain caloric intake, whether we were bulking, cutting, or maintaining, without food tracking, because we had done it with food tracking for a while. And I feel like sometimes it's been a success and other times it's been a failure. So my point here is that it's helpful to continue to challenge yourself to eat intuitively, but I think it's important to check in with yourself and get real and know when you should be tracking in order to get to your goals.
So I actually didn't ask Giacomo at all what he meant by this podcast topic. I said, what are we talking about? He was like, intuitive eating versus tracking food. And he started to talk and I was like, nope, save it for the podcast. I will respond then. So I literally am coming into this podcast blind right now. I guess I'm curious where this idea is coming from that you feel like everybody's just like, oh, I'm just going to intuitively eat. Like, I'm not getting that vibe from a lot of people. So I'm curious where you're getting that vibe from a lot of people.
Well, perhaps it's the fear that we've just moved a little too far away from the direction of saying, hey, macros are important and you need to track. And I feel like we need to kind of back up a little bit and still very much so recommend that people track during certain times, depending on what their goal is or depending on what challenges they have in their life. Sometimes it's okay to be on autopilot, and other times I think that when you go on autopilot, your good habits can, I want to say, fade away a little bit. They sort of fall to the wayside, and then you turn around and it's like, damn, I haven't been eating the right amount of protein, or I haven't been getting in the right amount of calories, or I haven't been eating the right kinds of foods. And there's no shame in that. There's no shame in doing these kinds of checks on oneself. And I think that that's what the 28-day overhaul to me was all about. I mean, in some sense, it was about getting people started that had fallen off the bandwagon for a while. And I think that's the way that we put it out there. But I think after the overhaul was created and it was out there in community, I quickly realized that anyone could benefit from a tune-up and doing that check with oneself and saying like, hey, are you eating healthfully? Are you getting the right amount of calories? Are you getting the right amount of protein? And that's where I think it's important to get that distinction right, where it's like you shouldn't necessarily be eating intuitively year-round.
Okay, so we all, I think everybody understands what tracking macros is, right? You eat it, you track it. Very simple. Intuitive eating, on the other hand, I feel like has a wide range of definitions, like a huge range of definitions. And it was actually in, like, there were actual very specific guidelines to what intuitive eating was when this concept was invented. And I think that it's kind of been just like muddied over time as it's been co-opted by all of these different communities. And I mean, that happens. That's happened with all, I mean, it's happened with intuitive eating, it's happened with body positivity, it's happened with veganism. Like, it's happened, that's just what happens as an ideology becomes more popular. But I mean, we need to try and have some definition of what intuitive eating is. And I guess a very simple definition, what most people think when they think intuitive eating is, well, I wanted to eat the thing, so I ate the thing. I mean, that's the very short version. So a lot of people come to intuitive eating because they either feel like they don't like their relationship with food or they don't like their relationship with their body for a variety of reasons. And they hear about this idea of intuitive eating like, oh, you just eat what you want when you want it. You allow yourself to enjoy the food that you want without guilt. And the idea is eventually over time, that's gonna level out. So for example, somebody who starts intuitive eating might wake up and say, I want cookies for breakfast. Then you're supposed to honor that craving and have cookies for breakfast. And over time, and by over time, I mean like usually months, over the course of months, as you start listening to your body, getting in touch with your hunger and fullness cues, you start craving a more balanced lifestyle. You start to hear it when your body says, hey, I would like a lot of vegetables with supper, or et cetera, et cetera. It sounds great, right? That sounds wonderful that one day you could just kind of listen to your body and just give it what it needs and what it wants and honor your cravings without putting yourself into like poor health or anything. Sounds wonderful. However, it doesn't appear to work for everybody in practice. In practice, this doesn't work for a lot of people, and you could argue it's because people don't adopt all of the principles of intuitive eating. That there's definitely an argument to be made there. But I think people just don't have enough basic nutrition knowledge. Just the basics. You don't have to understand every little nuanced thing about nutrition, but you need to understand what portion sizes look like. Some people start intuitive eating without having any idea what a normal, well-balanced meal looks like. How are you going to eventually intuitively eat in this really balanced way if you have no idea what it looks like? You need to know where you're trying to go in order to get there. So I feel like tracking, sometimes not even necessarily tracking, it could be a meal plan, it could just be learning portion sizes for yourself, but learning something, some guidelines as a stepping stone, I think is unbelievably helpful, unbelievably helpful. And just like you can never forget how to ride a bike, once you've learned, once you know some of these things for yourself, you don't just forget them. You don't just unlearn them. Like, once you have these skills, you have them forever. And at that point, I think you can, as Giacomo said, try to kind of take the training wheels off and try to test out that kind of intuitive eating, or what I refer to as informed intuitive eating. It's intuitive eating, but with the knowledge that you now have that you can't unknow.
And I think that that is the ultimate goal. And I'm still going to sit here and discuss how it's not possible to be like that 100% of the time if you have a goal that requires you to change direction from wherever you are body composition wise. Because let's face it, we're here, we're physique athletes, we help others achieve the physique they're looking for. And at some point, you can maintain and recomp slowly over time. However, whenever you're looking to make some sort of a dramatic change in your physique, I think the goal is always to get there as naturally as possible. But at some point, you're going to start to need to consider getting those tools back out to stay sharp and stay on your grind.
Right, because your body wants homeostasis. Your body wants to be in a happy, healthy place. And once it finds it, it's like, okay, cool. We're cool here. We like this. But let's say you're already in a healthy weight range, but you decide, you know what? I really want to put on more muscle. And you have to push that. Your appetite is going to fight back against you. You can't intuitively eat your way there, because in order to do that, you literally need to ignore your appetite cues when they say, hey, we're full. We're not really that hungry right now. Because in order to gain 10 pounds, you need to eat an excess of 35,000 calories. You're not going to intuitively do that based on your hunger and fullness cues. And even more so in the other direction, if you are letting yourself be a little bit hungry, that's like in direct opposition of intuitively honoring your hunger. So if you're trying to lose weight, sometimes you're going to be hungry. And that's always one of the hardest things for me to tell people, because no one likes to be hungry. Like, it sucks. No one likes to be hungry. And it's very easy, you know, because we live in a more is better kind of society, for me to say, you're going to be a little bit hungry, for somebody's brain to interpret that as I must be starving or I'm not making progress, which is not what I'm saying. But anytime you are, you know, coaxing your body into becoming smaller in some way, you're going to be hungry. And in order to achieve that goal, you're going to be hungry more than you would like to. So you can't intuitively get there. I think it's a huge, 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 huge skill. I'm not there yet to be able to do that. I mean, I could probably gain weight without tracking, I'm pretty sure. But I don't think that I could lose more than just a few pounds without actually tracking, because I, just like everybody else, don't like to be hungry. There are little tricks on how to keep yourself fuller for longer, but eventually your body's like, hey, I know what you're doing, and let me just turn the volume up on that hunger for you so you really know you're hungry. And if you're not tracking, you know, your pours of soy milk into your coffee are going to get bigger. Your dribbles of dressing or condiment or whatever onto your salad, they're going to get bigger. The calories are going to add up. And you're not even going to notice, and then you're not going to like necessarily be able to pinpoint why you're not making progress. So it's hard to do those things without tracking. But there are other times when, once you have this, you know, foundation of knowledge, where it's great to be in a place where you can kind of maintain where you're at and not have to track everything. It's wonderful.
And one point I was thinking about before it slips my mind, when you were talking about tracking to get it right when you're looking to be on the leaner side and you're a little far away from that goal, is hunger signals aside, it gets to the point where just trying to be in tune with your own body's hunger signals while you're being taken out of homeostasis winds up taking up so much damned headspace. And it's like you're sitting there, perhaps from a point of pride, being like, I don't need to track. I'm in touch with my body's signals. I know what's going on. And the truth of it is, yeah, maybe you are, but at what cost? While you're losing your sanity because you can't pay attention to what's going on around you, would it kill you to just basically like plug a couple of things in to keep you grounded so that you don't have to overthink whether you're hungry or not? Yeah, you're hungry. There's nothing you can do about it.
That's a good point.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I can totally see that. If I was trying to, oh my God, if I was trying to prep and not track, that gives me anxiety just to think about it, because I would literally be sitting there all the time like, okay, on a scale of 1 to 10, how hungry am I right now? Is it like a 3? Is it like 4? Like, is it time to eat? Should I wait longer? Whereas if I'm just tracking my stuff, I just plug it in and I'm like, yeah, I'm hungry, but that's when I'll eat next. And I'm just going to stick it out till that point. Okay, what else can I do right now? And like, go back to work. And I mean, I'm not going to paint it like you don't think about food when you're prepping and you're tracking, because yes, you do. But you have numbers to objectively look at to say, I am on track or I am not on track. And of course, there's times during prep when you do have to listen to your body. You know, warning flags are going off and you're like, you know, I'm supposed to only eat X today, but like, I'm really hurting today and I'm going to have an apple right now. And, you know, I'm just going to be over a little bit today and I'll just log it and I'll tell my coach and it's not going to be a big deal because I wouldn't have been able to get through today without this apple. It's totally happened. So, I mean, it doesn't have to be all one or all the other. It doesn't. You know, I have clients where they have their certain macros for their cut or for their prep. And we reach a point and they're like, you know, I would really love it if we could trade some of these fats in for carbs because the carbs just make me feel fuller and they make me feel better. And I'm like, thank you. Thank you for listening to your body and giving me that feedback. We can do that. We can make that happen. So you can still listen to your body and you can still collect information and data and feedback based on your own feelings about your body and still track, just like you can, you know, eat intuitively while still kind of quietly adding up the grams of protein you think you've had in the back of your head throughout the day. They don't have to be 100% mutually exclusive.
I'd love to say that this is just a simple formula that works for everybody because we all just want the answer. But we, each one of us, really are our own working experiment. And that experiment changes over time because you cannot control all the variables. You're human, life changes, things around you change. Each time you go through getting to a goal, even if the goal is almost exactly the same, like, hey, I want to lose 10 pounds, for example. Losing 10 pounds in 2020 is going to look very different than losing 10 pounds did for you in 2015. You can't go through the same formula. You have to account for a change in variables. So, I mean, science, yes. However, there's still anecdote and it very much so matters what's going on in your world. So,
yeah, your lifestyle is different. Your family dynamic might be different. Your job might be different. Your hormones might be different as you get older. So, yeah, there are basic tenets of nutrition and biology that are true across the board, but you're not a machine. Everybody's going to be a little bit different. I didn't think I'd be at a point where I intuitively ate through the entire off season and still maintained a body composition that I was happy with while still making progress. Could I make a little more progress if I tracked all of my food all the way through the off season? I guarantee it. I'm 100% certain that I could. I think I mentioned on this podcast when we had the kids here, I thought that I was overeating. Like I thought that I was, you know, when the kids didn't finish their food, I'd just finish what was on their plate. I wasn't tracking it. It was chaos. It was abs. Actually, that's their nicknames. Daisy is chaos and Desmond is mayhem. Chaos and mayhem. And that was literally our lives here. And then, you know, after they were gone, or maybe it was just towards the end of their stay here, I just started plugging stuff in to just get an idea of where I was at. And there were days where it was like 1,400 calories. And I was like, how is that even possible? Now, there were days where it was 2,500 calories, but there were days when it was way lower than what I thought I was eating. That definitely didn't help me build muscle, you know? So again, my lifestyle made it much harder for me to intuitively have any clue what I was doing at that point. But, you know, now that the kids aren't here, my day-to-day is relatively the same, except for the days when chaos and mayhem are here again. I can really easily eat like 2,000 to 2,200 calories a day without really thinking about it.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, even just a couple of months ago, my coach had me say, you're going to laugh. My coach was like, yo, I want you to gain like 5 or 6 pounds over the next 6 months. And I was already at a place where my body is naturally comfortable.
Be like, I'll do you one better. I can do that in 2 weeks.
Meanwhile, what did I do? I self-destructed and lost 3 pounds. And I didn't even realize I was doing it. In my head, I thought I was eating more and gaining weight. In reality, I actually lost a couple of pounds. And then afterwards, when I finally stepped on the scale to see, because I was lamenting, and because I'm still a part of me wishes that I went through my prep in full last year. So it resulted in self-sabotage because I was being emotional about it in hindsight. And I just wound up fighting the bulk and moving in the wrong direction because that's just what happens. But I thought all the while that I was gaining weight. So then I finally stepped on the scale, which is another form of tracking, by the way. Mm-hmm. You can't get lazy about it. Sometimes you got to track on the scale too, whether you're in the mood to or not. I got on the scale and I was like, oh my gosh, I dropped 3 pounds and I was supposed to be gaining 6 pounds.
In a week?
I don't even keep track of time. That just goes to show you how I was like, I'm in touch with myself. I've been doing this for so long. No, the truth is that I still, like everyone else, need to hold myself accountable and collect data on myself, even if I don't think that I have to, because I can be efficient and focus on other areas of my life. At some point, I still need to collect that data myself and make sure that I'm actually moving in the right direction. Feelings are good and all well and good, but you still got to be rational about things and know which direction you're moving while also checking in with yourself.
Yeah, I think it's important to know, and you know, you clearly learned it. I learned it when the kids were here. If you're going to take a step back from tracking, that's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing, but you just might need to make peace with the fact that if you take a step back from that, you're taking a step back towards precision. You're taking a step back towards really managing your route to your goals. You're giving up some control. You're giving up some control. Again, not always a bad thing, but you need to be aware of it. Without a doubt, I could have made better progress if I had been tracking all year. Without a doubt, Giacomo could have made better progress if we were tracking all year. But we made pretty good progress because we spent a lot of time tracking very meticulously for years prior to that. 2020 was a keep your head above water situation, and I think anybody who was able to just do that, who was able to just tread water during 2020, succeeded by a landslide. Like, if you were just able to do that, then I think you crushed it. But as we look forward to hopefully better times, just be aware that the tracking really does give you more control over your goals and how you get there and when you get there. That's part of it. So when would be a good time to intuitively eat or to rely more on your body's cues and your own knowledge?
Well, the simple answer is anytime you want to challenge yourself to grow. I think that's the simple answer. I think the practical response is anytime you've gotten to a safe place where you can be a little more balanced and test yourself and see if you can keep your body balanced out for, say, the next week or the next couple of months. And I still think it's important to not just run away with it and forget that you still need to see if the thing is actually working instead of feeling like it's working. You know, it's important to maybe make sure to map out your athletic goals for the long term by making perhaps a little less progress on paper while growing as a person so that you can still actually do this thing 10 years from now. And simultaneously, you're doing that, and you're also learning how to grow as an athlete and trust yourself to do some of these things without actually tracking. And each time, I feel like you can perhaps do it a little more, but sometimes you really do have to get back to down to the basics and be like, okay, I have to track more often than not. So yeah, anytime you want to experiment, anytime that you've reached a state of balance where you're at homeostasis, and you want to see if you can remain there for, say, 3 or 4 months. I think it's safer to try this when you're bulking, honestly. It's a little harder to do when you're trying to lean out. But that being said, I think you can challenge yourself when you're trying to lean out too. Just don't get too greedy with it. Do it for, say, the first week or month or 2 months. And while you're testing your limits, being intuitive, check in and make sure that you're actually leaning out. Take pictures, weigh in, etc., etc. And as soon as you realize that the rate of progress is not there, then it, like, right away, go back to tracking. So those are a couple of examples. You have any to share, Danny?
Well, I would say only try and experiment with intuitive eating if you're not already dealing with extreme hunger or extreme fullness. If you're just coming off of a diet or a prep or any kind of restrictive phase that has left you feeling really hungry, this is not the time. This is not the time to just be like, you know what? Now is the time to listen to my body, because your body is going to be very hungry. It's going to be very hungry for very hyperpalatable foods. And the outcome of that is likely to be significant weight gain, which maybe your body needs. Your body might very well need significant weight gain, but it's probably going to happen at such a rate that it scares the crap out of you and makes you think, oh man, intuitive eating is a complete disaster. I'll never do that again. And it's interesting because this is actually one of the tactics that they do use in eating disorder clinics is exactly this. And I don't know, I don't think I agree with it. Just having seen what it's done to a lot of people, And I understand medically why they're doing this. I totally, totally get it. These folks need to be weight restored. Their leanness is literally killing them. They need to get their weight and their body fat back to where it needs to be. But it happens so fast that I think mentally it's significantly harder for people to trust the process in that regard. So I just don't think when you're really, really hungry and very food focused, I don't think that's a great time to do intuitive eating. But I think it can be a good time to implement flexible dieting and just increasing your calories and using flexible dieting and incorporating, you know, more of what people think of as fun foods, right? See that the fun foods, they're not, you know, you get to scratch that itch of having a craving. Hopefully your weight will go back up to where it needs to be, or at least your hunger will begin to subside. And once you're in a place where you're not food focused, I have this one client, I've worked with her for years now, and it's funny, at the end of prep, like, just dreaming of her next free meal, right? Just dreaming of it, dreaming of all the different restaurants that she'll go to when prep is over and as we, you know, do recovery diet and all of that. And then as we get into the off season, I'll be like, what was your free meal? And she'll be like, I can't remember. Oh, I didn't really care what we had, so I just let my partner pick it. And I'm like, can you imagine saying that a year ago when you were in the middle of prep? And she's like, oh my God, no, that would never happen then. So that's like a good sign when you have an opportunity to have, you know, fun food out at a restaurant and you're kind of like indifferent to it. You're like, yeah, I like it, but like, I could take it or leave it. You're in a good place to try intuitive eating. If you're still sitting there dreaming about your next meals, or when I go to this place, I'm going to get this and I'm going to get this and we're going to split this, and nope, that is not the time. But if you're not feeling that way, it can be a great time, because let me tell you how liberating it is to go out. I mean, who the heck is going out right now? But, you know, if you go order takeout and you get a pizza and you're splitting it with your partner, and you are able to have two slices and be like, yeah, I'm full, actually. I'll put the rest away. I'll have some more tomorrow or later in the week. It is such an amazing feeling when you know full right and well that in under different circumstances, you would hoover your half of the pizza and be like, where's dessert? It's so freeing to realize that your body is in a place where, you know, two pieces of pizza is gonna satisfy you, and you're gonna be like, you're gonna want a salad to go along with it because you know it makes you feel good.
See,
that's a good place to be with intuitive eating.
See, yeah, I totally agree with Danny on this one. Where I find the challenge that the part that I don't think we talk about enough is when you do have to, in fact, look to have more mass on your frame to perform and recover, aka eat up. And I know Danny likes to joke around and say, like, I could do that in 2 weeks. And obviously I'm on the other end of the spectrum when it comes to hunger signals here. So I guess speaking from my perspective, but also making this very important point, because it is true. Once you have dialed in and gotten yourself to a certain point, it is actually a challenge to eat up.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're looking at me. I see that look, and I know what you're saying. Like, oh yeah, I was talking to your mom about this last night, and she was like, oh, poor you, you have to eat. But
no, I agree. And somewhere Giacomo has a recording of me at the end of an off season.
Oh God, are you reading my thoughts? Because that's been on my mind the past couple weeks.
I was in the gym, and I had just like eaten this big breakfast, and I like knew I had to go eat a big lunch when I got home. And I just looked at Giacomo and I was like, I am so sick of food. I am so sick of eating. And he just whips his phone out and turns the voice recorder on and like, again, say it again. I'm going to play it back for you at the end of prep. And I was like, it's true. I'm sick of food. I don't want to eat. I'm so sick of food. I just don't want to eat. And that's me. You know, I have a hearty appetite and my body likes to gain weight. I mean, I was an obese teenager. I don't think your body forgets that, unfortunately. And it kind of, you know, that's your homeostasis for a long time, is your body wants to be there and it wants to get you back there. So yeah, I'm a hungry girl, but it happened to me too. So I know that it's true.
The point that I'm trying to get at is, one, it's a good sign, because it means you're actually in touch with your body's satiety signals and you can maintain a healthy body composition and body weight. I mean, let's face it, eating up and bulking is not natural. I think that for some, maybe you might have to track to actually eat more food.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, track food.
Yes.
Yeah.
I agree.
But I think for others, sometimes you can step on the scale a little more often and just find creative ways to make sure that you're eating more foods that are not too voluminous. Like, just for example, if you're relying on oats in the morning, they're so filling that you just might wind up eating less during the day. Or if you're... stuff like that.
But again, that's a knowledge gap, right? Mm-hmm. To me, that's not an intuitive eating gap. That is a knowledge gap. Mm. If you think that oats are a great bulking food as opposed to, say, like a rice porridge, like a white rice porridge or cereal, you know, grains that have been pounded and dehydrated into their smallest state, that's a bulking food. Oats, not a bulking food. But if you have a good knowledge base, you would know that, right?
Right.
So, that's why I think that the tracking and the learning is such an important step. It's why I'm so, so passionate about teaching people just the basics of nutrition and the basics of thermodynamics and the basics of volumetrics. Like, if you don't know that, if you don't know that stuff, you have an open door to be like scammed and lied to and convinced that some hocus pocus stuff is what's going to get you in shape forever. Once you understand those basics, like, I feel like you're basically impenetrable to dietary bullshit.
Not only are you impervious to diet bullshit, you also are able to make better decisions with your coach or just by self-coaching, right? You have those tools and you can use them to your advantage by knowing when things are working and when things are not.
Yeah, like it gives me fired up that this stuff isn't like just taught to kids in school. Why isn't this taught in a health class? Oh my goodness.
It's a whole separate subject for another day.
I think about some stuff that I did have to learn in health class, and I'm like, that never applied to any part of my life, but like, this would have applied to my life. Sorry. I'll save that tangent for another day. Moving on to our question and answer segment of the day.
You still can't read my handwriting, can
you? Not even a little bit. Wait, I gotta try though. So... type the tickery, someone messes up. Okay, I literally can't read your handwriting, but I know this question, so I'm going to paraphrase. The question came from someone in our Facebook group, and it was basically, you know, I do a great job sticking to my program when I'm home, which is most of the time right now, but what the heck am I gonna do when I start going back out again and seeing friends for happy hour? They're on like 1450 calories and they're like, I can eat that in one sitting. I could eat that and drink that in one sitting. How the heck do you handle that situation? And there were some amazing responses in the group, but I thought it was such a good question that we'd answer it here too.
All right, so this person is doing the 28-day overhaul and is clearly committing to something that is going to be a big change for them, a reduction in calories, if you will. They've made a commitment to themselves to eat less, and that's hard. It's hard to just accept that, right? And obviously, we are all about flexibility and making sure that socially, with relationships and with our lifestyle, that others feel it as little as possible for as long as possible when you are making a decision for yourself to change your physique and get into caloric restriction, if you will. It takes a little bit of planning. I think in the beginning, you really do need to focus on the basics and make sure that you have your game plan at home, you have your pantry stocked, you know what kind of foods are going to work for you without going out. And I mean, immediately I think to myself, okay, well now here's where the feeling of deprivation comes in. I cannot ever eat more at dinner. I can't have a drink or eat out. These foods are not trackable. They're calorically dense. Alcohol is empty calories, yada, yada, yada. So I get that. I do think that it makes sense to maybe eat out and drink less frequently. I think that's just a concession you're going to have to make with yourself in order to be successful. But I don't think it makes sense to feel like you can't do that ever. It's important to space out your food throughout the day accurately to get in the right amount of protein throughout the day. My simple answer for when someone wants to go out to eat and have a couple of drinks is to space out lunch and dinner as opposed to having snacks between lunch and dinner, and eat more voluminous food at lunch, meaning have a heartier serving of vegetables. Make absolutely certain that you're hydrated, because when you're dehydrated, you're more likely to be hungry. Make sure you're getting in a nice amount of protein. Instead of having a snack in between lunch and dinner, maybe have just a straight serving of protein, something like a protein shake or a serving of seitan, for example. So one of the recipes that are protein dense, you know, take out the sides, but just have the protein component. And then you have a little more calories to work with at the end of the day. And as far as avoiding drinking altogether, I don't think that that's absolutely necessary. If you're in the mood to have a drink, just be aware that calories can add up much faster depending on what you're choosing to imbibe with. So in other words, if you're going to have a margarita, that's probably going to be a monumental mistake for most. That's a sugary drink, for example. Or even like a super hoppy beer, that's going to add up in calories real quick. Maybe have a light beer. Maybe have a diet soda and vodka, for example. Is that a drink?
Yes.
Diet soda and vodka. Clearly not the bartender between the two of us over here. But anyway, those are just some examples on how you can have a drink or two without having sugary, empty calories get in the way of you being able to enjoy socializing. And then as far as bar food is concerned, yeah, be careful about, I don't know, munching on the salty pretzels and peanut mix.
That is not going to exist after COVID.
Ooh, ew. Did not even think about that.
I mean, I thought it was gross before COVID and I was a bartender, but I cannot imagine that's ever going to make a comeback.
Probably not. Avoid the fried food, or if you're going to, maybe share it with someone else and have a smaller serving, for example. Stuff like that. When you order out, I feel like there's the propensity to eat everything on your plate. And that's a mistake. You can send some of it back. You could send all of it back.
Send some of it back?
Yeah, I know. You like to talk about packing it and bringing it home.
Who sends food back because they're full? You mean like just don't eat all of it and throw it away? Is that what you mean?
That. Yeah. And I know that it's like a little weird to say, and sometimes you just want to pack it. But if you're going to bring the food home and not eat it the next day, or it's going to haunt you, sometimes just leave it. You don't have to finish what's on your plate because you ordered it. Let's face it, you're there for the ambiance and you're there for the people. You're not necessarily there for the food. And you can enjoy your food in moderation and still reap the reward and benefit of socializing and just enjoying being out of the house. So there are some of my thoughts.
So a couple of other practical tips. If you don't want to drink, a soda water with a splash of cranberry and a lime looks like a cocktail. Any bartender will be happy to put that in a glass that looks like a cocktail glass for you. I was a bartender forever and we loved doing this, especially for the designated drivers. So, you know, they weren't drinking, but we still made their drink look fancy. Also alternating, if you are going to drink, between cocktail, water, cocktail, water. Drink water in between your drinks. It's going to slow you down. It's going to keep you hydrated. If you know where you're going, look at the menu online before you go. Make the choice of what you're going to eat while you're stone cold sober, because your choices might change after a drink or two. You might be looking at the salad with the grilled tofu, but then after a drink or two, you're like, actually, a Beyond Burger with fries sounds pretty sweet to me. So part of the reason that I'm very particular about drinking in general from a fitness perspective is not just because it's empty calories. It's not just because it stops your muscle protein synthesis as soon as you start drinking. It's actually largely because it changes what you would normally do. It changes your inhibitions. It lowers them. It makes you make very different choices. And when it comes to food, it doesn't usually push that needle in a healthier direction, is what I'm saying. So definitely still possible to go out. And if you are like, you know, the party gal and everybody knows like, oh, you know, Danny's definitely going to have 5 or 6 beers when she comes out with me. And then suddenly you're Danny that has 1, maybe 2 beers when you go out. Yes, it'll take your friends a little bit of time to get used to it, but They get used to it. They get over it. It's really not a big deal. So it just takes a little bit of time. But I think this is a great question and an issue that, you know, it's comes up for everybody at some point. So I'm glad we answered that one.
All right, this question's for you. Love your podcast. I have a quick question. I remember on one episode you mentioned when you're losing weight, taking in less calories, that your body may be tired, have less energy, and will try to reserve energy in basic daily activities. Question is, will my body adjust to that? Will I eventually have more energy? I'm just feeling a little tired and not myself.
Okay, great question. So, will your body ever adjust to it? So, you slowing down your bodily functions and just kind of like moving less to reserve energy, that is your body adjusting to the caloric deficit. That is your body's way of adjusting. So if you're saying, will you ever get used to it? Probably not. It doesn't, I don't think you ever get to a point where it feels good, where this lowered energy, you're like, oh, actually I have tons of energy. You just kind of get used to operating with less energy, but it's not fun. It's not pleasant. That part doesn't get easier until you start taking in more calories again. And then you'll start moving more, and then your body will start to adjust and upregulate your metabolism again. So all of that slowing down, that's your body downregulating metabolism. And the only time that your body will ever get used to it is if you lose so much weight that your smaller body, the calories you're intaking are now maintenance for that smaller body. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Smaller bodies burn fewer calories, so they need fewer calories. So in that sense, yes, you can kind of get used to it. But if you're trying to get past that particular weight, you're likely eventually just going to have to lower your calories and go through that whole cycle again. And it sucks. So what do you do? One, sleep more. There's only two real ways that your body can recover, and it's nutrition and sleep. These are your recovery tools. And when you're dieting, nutrition's not going to be the one, okay? So it has to be sleep. So make sure that your sleep schedule, your sleep hygiene is really, really on point. The other thing is, this is the time to utilize caffeine as a tool. So I don't recommend people use caffeine all the time. I don't use caffeine at all right now because I'm eating plenty. I don't need it. But when I start dieting and I start prepping and my calories get lower and my energy starts to get lower, I will introduce caffeine back into the picture. And I just kind of make peace with the fact that my caffeine intake is probably going to climb as I go further and further into that diet or that prep. And then as soon as it's over, I start to phase it back again, because caffeine works, right? It does work, but not if you're totally desensitized to it because you consume a ton of it all the time. Then it doesn't work. Then you need so much of it to feel even the tiniest effect that you're actually taking in a dangerous amount of caffeine. We don't want that. But if you utilize caffeine properly and responsibly, it can be a very helpful tool during these periods of dieting.
Right. And to Danny's point, to expand on that, any tools that help during dieting, whatever you learn helps. Voluminous food, the stuff that is sort of hyperpalatable that you sprinkle in to satisfy cravings and try not to rely on too heavily, all that stuff, try your best to remember the tools that work and actively avoid using them when you're not dieting. Because like Danny said, it's not just caffeine. It's anything, really.
You need it to work when you need it to work.
I love stevia and sugar. I love stevia. I love sweet coffee. So I purposely, when I'm, like right now, I don't have anything sweet in my coffee because I know that I'll appreciate it when I'm dieting down. Right. And if I'm going to put something sweet in my coffee, it's probably going to be sugar as opposed to stevia, because I know I'll need a stevia one day when I'm dieting down.
Yeah, like I mean, if you've seen any of my YouTube videos, I use some sugar-free things when I'm prepping. Like I use the Walden Farms pancake syrup. I'll occasionally have a diet soda, a couple of other things. There are some places where I bring in some sweeteners, non-calorie sweeteners. And then I cut that out as soon as it's over, because I know that it's just a tool to get me through to the other side. And when I see another example would be zucchini. I eat zucchini like it is going out of style at the end of a prep because it is so voluminous. Zucchini, lettuce, oh my goodness, love them so much. But I don't really eat much of those things in the off season because come prep time, I don't want to be sick of them, first of all, and I want to be able to enjoy high volume foods and for my body to go, ooh, something new, we like this, and for, you know, for that to work for a little while. But yeah, very good point there, Giacomo. The sleep though, you should always sleep well.
Oh yeah.
Always sleep well, guys.
All right, everybody, thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of Vegan Proteins, Muscles by Brussels Radio. Feel free to stay in touch with us on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, in our group on Facebook, Muscles by Brussels Radio, everywhere at Muscles by Brussels and at Vegan Proteins. Drop us an email, veganproteins@gmail.com. We love to hear from you. Once again, my name's Giacomo.
And I'm Danny.
And we'll talk to you soon. Take a minute for granted.